Judges 20, continuing the miserable story of the Levite and his concubine, whom he didn't love, who he had split up into pieces and sent throughout Israel. And I suggested that that was, in a weird sort of way, rather similar to the metaphor Jesus uses of breaking up his body and dividing it amongst ourselves, so that we might decide what we should do and consider it. So the congregation assembled, Judges 20 verse 1, as one man. You see this all the time. Religious people love to fight against a common enemy and to eagerly judge those that have done wrong. And they unite for a moment when they do that against a common enemy. Think of Herod and Pilate being made friends together at the Lord's crucifixion. But that is not the unity of the Spirit. So they all gather together with a huge army. They took their places in the assembly of the people of God, 400,000 armed soldiers. In other words, they had decided before the whole meeting happened that Gibeah was guilty and they were going to go and wipe them out. Now, the Benjamites heard that the Israelites had gone up to Mizpah. That implies that the Benjamites weren't there at the conference. It would have been a waste of time going anyway, because it was all decided ahead of time pretty clearly that they were all guilty. And in fact, you learn in the next chapter, chapter 21, that the Israelites threatened death to anyone who didn't come to the gathering. So the Benjamites knew that if they didn't go to the gathering, then they were judged worthy of death, and if they did go, then they were going to for sure be found guilty. That was going to be clear. They got all the soldiers, 400,000 armed soldiers, all ready to execute judgment anyway. So this reminds me of business meetings of churches that I've had to sit through where, unfortunately, the verdict was decided ahead of time. Evidence doesn't matter. We all united in a sort of shark tank of feeding frenzy to judge the wicked, as they think. So then, the Levite starts off with his story. I came to Gibeah in Benjamin, I and my concubine, to stay the night. Absolutely factual. But he doesn't volunteer the fact that his woman had run away from him, probably because he abused her, and that he and her father had been drinking for 5 days solid before the incident. He doesn't volunteer that. The men of Gibeah came after me and surrounded the house at night. They intended to kill me, and they raped my concubine, and she's dead. Now, here he starts to twist it. There's no record that the men of Gibeah wanted to kill him. It wasn't all the men of Gibeah. It's probably a small group of drunk yobbos. And he doesn't volunteer the fact that it was him and the old man who suggested that they rape his concubine. He gave her to them. He didn't try to defend her. And he carefully avoids saying that they murdered her. He just said, they raped my concubine and she is dead. He didn't say that, well, she managed to walk back to the door of the house and try to knock on the door, but I was so stoned on my wine that I couldn't really be bothered. He doesn't volunteer that. So this is all very twisted. And then he says, I took my concubine and cut her in pieces and sent her throughout all the country of Israel because this is a disgraceful and an abominable act. Now, disgraceful act, it's the same word that's used in Leviticus 19, verse 29, that it would be a disgraceful thing if a woman was prostituted. Well, that is effectively what he'd done by letting other men sleep with her. So then, when he says they have committed this abominable act in Israel, that's actually what the sons of Jacob did when they wanted to destroy the entire town of Shechem for the apparent rape of Dinah. And I'm not sure Dinah was raped at all. Shechem was in love with her. I don't think he raped her. But anyway, that's Genesis 34, verse 7. And who were the two who went and really massacred the people of Shechem in overreaction? It was Simeon and Levi. Levi, the ancestor of this Levite. So he sort of quotes a Bible verse without any attention to context. And the context of this alluding to they have done an abominable act in Israel, that was what was said about the incident when Simeon and Levi overreact and massacre Shechem. Actually, the context condemned him, but he didn't worry about that. Just take a bit of spirituality here and there, a Bible verse here and there, a few phrases out of context from a verse in the Bible, and that is enough. So then he says, "Now, you Israelites, please give your advice and your counsel." Well, pretty obviously, he was implying that they should go and massacre these people, and that's what they all wanted to do anyway. And of course, the people as one man said, "We are going to go to Gibeah. We will go up against it by lot, and we will punish them for this disgusting thing they have done." They don't ask counsel of God at all. And all this is on the say-so of one man who's an alcoholic, who's not a moral man. And they assume that he's right. They totally don't ask God's advice. They ignore Bible teaching in the law of Moses about nobody should be put to death on the word of one witness at the mouth of two or three witnesses. It must be done. Well, the old man and the Levite servant are nowhere to be seen. They don't feature in the record. They had scooted off, presumably, and didn't want to testify. But the Levite's word was taken as true because the people already were in the feeding frenzy mentality. So, verse 13, they come up to Gibeah and say, "Give us the men so that we can put them to death." But Benjamin would not listen to their brothers, the Israelites. Keeps emphasizing their brothers. The hint all the way through is, this is not what you do to your brother. Now, they say, "We need to put to death and put away this evil from Israel." Exodus 21:16. It was a person who kidnapped someone else who had to be put to death and the evil put away from Israel. Well, effectively, the Levite had kidnapped this woman from her. He kidnapped her back from her father-in-law, or from his father-in-law, her father. Now, Benjamin refused to do this. They disagreed, I guess, with the narrative, and they questioned the credibility of this single witness, the Levite. And therefore, all this miserable mess is going to happen. The whole assumption was that the men of Gibeah had murdered the woman, but they hadn't. She'd walked back to the house, knocked on the door, and the Levite was drunk. He couldn't be bothered with her, and so she died. So they gather together, these unspiritual people, absolutely victims of a groupthink mentality, feeding frenzy, with an obsession to judge and destroy. No attention to facts, nor to godly principles, nor to asking God's wisdom. And so the Benjamites have 700 chosen men who were left-handed. And God uses them to destroy thousands of Israelites. God likes left-handed people. There's several examples of where God uses left-handed people. He seems to rejoice in using those whom man despises. And in those days, left-handed people were probably viewed as they are in primitive societies today, as weird. You think how in the 20th century in Albania, left-handed people couldn't hold any government office as recently as that in Europe. So then, the Israelites go to Bethel and ask counsel of God, who shall go up first to battle against Benjamin? And Yahweh said, Judah shall go first. Well, God didn't want this in one sense, but he was confirming them in the way they were going. In Judges 21, it says that God made a breach within Israel through this matter. So he was confirming them in the way in which they wanted to go. And when there's division in a church or between persons, It's easy to think, oh, that was just human dysfunction. Well, it is that. But God also works to confirm it, if that is the true way that people want to go. So he gives them the advice, Judah shall go up first. But they don't take any notice of that, because all the Israelites got up the next morning and encamped against Gibeah. The men of Israel went to fight against Benjamin. And the Benjamites came out and destroyed 22,000 Israelites on that day. So they totally ignored what God had said. I let Judah go first. They all went up, and they lost 22,000 men. They go and weep before Yahweh. And they say to Yahweh, should we go up and fight against the Benjamites, our brothers? Yahweh said, go up against them. He was confirming them in the wrong way. It's like he tells Balaam, don't go with these messengers of Balak. Don't curse the people. But Balaam wants to go, and eventually God says, well, okay, go with them. Then the angel stands in the way and rebukes him. Why are you coming? You know, didn't you get the message? And Balaam says, I have sinned, I'm sorry. Do you want me to go back then? Well, obviously, Balaam. But the angel says, no, go with them. He ran headlong after the reward for iniquity. So we read in the New Testament. And God saw that and pushed him further along the path. And it's the same here. If you want the way of division, judgmentalism, bitterness and anger, God will push you down that path. And yet their question was really its own answer. Shall we go to fight again against the Benjamites, our brothers? Well, very often our questions are really the answer. If you think about the question, well, of course, no. Do you fight against your brothers? No. Should we disfellowship brother so-and-so or sister so-and-so? Well, the question is the answer, no, because he's your brother and she's your sister. And so this weeping before Yahweh after a defeat, an unexpected defeat, it recalls Ai and the whole story of the fight against Gibeah really recalls Ai all the way through. The same strategy is used, the smoke goes up from the city. Eventually when they do win, they attack and then they faint, they turn their backs and appear to run away before Gibeah. The Gibeonites come out and then they take the city and smoke goes up out of the city and the ambush turns around, etc. It's an exact repeat of Ai. And they should have seen that. And they should have perceived that, why did Israel lose at Ai? Because they themselves had sinned. But they didn't want to learn that. So they come up against Gibeah the second day, and again, Benjamin kills this time 18,000 Israelites. And again they come and they cry to God, verse 26, they offered burnt offerings and peace offerings to Yahweh. Well, the normal order is not burnt offering and peace offering. It's sin offering, burnt offering and peace offering. Sin offering, you recognize your sin, and then you devote yourself to God. You promise devotion to him, burnt offering, and then you celebrate your peace with God that comes from that devotion. They didn't want to accept they'd sinned, so they didn't do any sin offering, just burnt offering and peace offering. We can be the same. Can sing words of songs that have got great devotion in them, apparently, and great peace with God. But unless in your heart you've made the sin offering, you've recognized your sin, and the basis for that exaltation of spirit is your own conviction that you have been forgiven by grace, unless you're going to do that, then the apparent dedication and peace with God is fake. So the Israelites again ask for guidance, and God says, yes, tomorrow I will give you victory. And as I say, they then go and use the same strategy as with Ai, because God is trying to nudge them, as he nudges us, to see that, look, you're in the same position, you've sinned. So then they refuse to face that, and in the end, all the Benjamites are wiped out, apart from 600 men who flee to the Rock of Rimmon. And there's been mass slaughter of at least 40,000 of the Israelites. The men of Israel went back to Benjamin and put to the sword everything in the towns, including the animals and anything they found, and all the towns which they found they set on fire. That's just the language used about what Israel were to have done under Joshua to the Canaanite cities. You notice they didn't take the animals for themselves. Animals were sort of the currency of the time. They, as it were, sacrificed them to Yahweh. They were treating their brethren like Canaanites. And yet, they were alluding to God's commandments about destroying Canaanites. So, they're so mixed up. To fight against your brethren is wrong. Clearly. And yet they do so with the usage of biblical allusion and a verse here and half a verse there, way out of context. That's what happens when there's division within brotherhoods and between families and so forth. This is not God's will. God may push divisive people further down the path, but it's not God's will. And yet the whole thing is done with sort of quasi-spiritual reasoning behind it, typically this is for unity kind of thing. And the takeaway lesson for all of us is don't mix flesh and spirit, because in the end, if you love God, you will devote yourself to him and not just partly take to yourself a few verses here, a few ideas of spiritual things there, but just get on and do what your own gut reaction tells you to do.